Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th day of November. Holy moly.
It's moving along.
Anno Domini 2019, and you, oh, you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Yes, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest.
Which means if folks are looking for us live
on the YouTube,
we're not there.
But we are streaming at jazz901.org or through the Jazz 90.1 app.
Yep.
So you can still
get
to us.
No reason not to listen to us.
No reason on this planet. Not to listen to us. All right. I know we have people on the line. Hold on. We'll get to you. I got to read the news first. Microsoft. Microsoft. Microsoft is finally going to stop trying to make its Bing search engine happen. For consumers, anyway. A decade after launching its search engine, Microsoft appears ready to acknowledge that the average internet user isn't interested in giving up Google. So it's now pivoting Bing. Then the crowd goes wild. So it's now pivoting Bing to target businesses. On Monday, Microsoft published a blog post announcing its rebranding of Bing as the search engine for business. Mostly, this seems to mean taking a company's intranet, their private internal computer network containing useful information and resources for that company, and making it easier to navigate, which you can also already do in Google. Anyway, type in the address bar to search for people using natural language, such as by their title, team name, and office location, Microsoft wrote in the blog post. You can also search for office location with answers that show floor plans for directions. Of course, all these data have to be put in, and I suspect they all connect to Active Directory, but that's another story. Microsoft goes hard on the idea that using Bing in this way will save workers time, citing McKinsey & Company research that found employees spend nearly 20% of their day looking for company information or trying to track down colleagues. Well, they're all hiding in the bed. Anyway, however, it fails to mention that the research is from 2012 or how many, many business-focused collaboration and communication tools have hit the market since then that might already address the problem that Microsoft search in Bing could solve. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what's your go-to search engine? Your choices are Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, Yahoo, Baidu, AOL, Wolfram Alpha, and of course, Other. And if you select Other, please go to the forums, and you get to those pretty easily. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 9 November 19. What's your go-to search engine? And, of course, you can give us a call, assuming you can find our number. 585, I'll give it to you. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. So far, we have 190 votes in the poll. It is not a shock to me that Google is number one. It is also not a with over half the votes, and following at 30% is DuckDuckGo.
Yeah,
Bing's got under 10%. Yahoo's got under 7%.
Well, that's just a common saying, though. You know, I hear folks say it all the time now. Oh, I wonder what about this? I go, you just turn to an individual and say, Google it.
Yeah, Google is now.
Oh, darn, I forgot, you know, and they go, duh. It's like one of those duh moments. Yep. If you've got a question about anything, people automatically will Google it.
Google is now a verb.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you can Google things.
You just Google it, and it'll find you the answer.
Quiet. My
Google Assistant
heard its name. And
but, you know, just like everything else, though, folks, it's the internet. It's not totally gospel.
Right.
You know, some of these folks, matter of fact, I was listening to a talk show, and it was interesting that they were talking about medical MD. And a lot of young, they're calling the millennials.
Yeah, the millennials.
You know, they don't want to listen to what the doctor just told them.
Right.
They're going online and doing their self-medication or, you know, diagnosis.
Yep. And then first, never look up anything on WebMD. It's always cancer.
Well, the other thing disturbing.
Yeah.
People are like, if they have rashes in that, they'll be taking pictures of it.
I don't need to see your pictures.
Yeah, posting it up there and asking their friends what they think because the doctor already said, well, it could be this. Do you think it's that?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a new phrase that millennials are using called Dr. Google.
Dr. Google?
Yeah, yeah. Don't ask Dr. Google. Go to a real doctor.
Oh, Lord help me.
I get it. When you want to know, are poinsettias poisonous to cats?
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Then, yes, look it up on Google. If you're wondering if that rash is a problem, go to a doctor.
Or you could use Google to find a doctor that will handle, say, skin rashes.
Dermatologist or whatever. Yeah. Right, right, right.
Do it that way, but don't go for opinions.
Yeah, yeah.
Or diagnosis.
Yeah. At any rate, please vote in the poll. We've got 217 people who voted already. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah.
The new poll is people are voting, and I'm very pleased. And again, Google is well over 50%, followed by DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo is a search engine that says it's completely private. They record nothing. They save nothing. They look at nothing.
Mm.
Now, how true is that? That's what they say. And so a lot of people are using DuckDuckGo so that they're not tracked by Google.
Yeah.
And I get that. I absolutely get that. You don't get the depth or breadth of responses you get from Google. And you have to be more careful in crafting your query because Google's a whole lot better in figuring out what you really meant. But it is private. And if you're one of those people who rarely ever goes past the first page of Google, DuckDuckGo is probably pretty adequate for most things.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's okay. It's pretty nice. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller is Alan from Webster, New York. Thank you for patiently waiting on the line, Alan. What's up?
Hi, guys, and thanks for having the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate you guys calling in.
I have an Android phone question.
So yeah.
I have a Moto G6 running Android 9.0, an internal memory of 32 gigabytes, and an SD card with 128 gigabytes on. So I think I know what's wrong, but I don't know how to fix it. Let me describe what happened. So you know, periodically I go in to copy off my photos that I take with my phone camera, back them up on my desktop. I do have the Google backup running, so I check there. My photos are there. And so what happens is when I go to copy them off the last time, it starts to say calculating the time to transfer it to my PC, and then it stops after a bit, and if I go back, it says the folders are blank. Then what happens if I disconnect and I reconnect, they're still there, and I can see them on the phone, but they won't copy off. And I've tried this on a desktop PC, a laptop. I've tried three different cables, so I know that that's not it. So I poked around and Googled it, as you were discussing.
Right.
And the probable cause says it's a corrupted card.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem I have is when I put in the card, the phone's about a year and a half old. I told it to use it as an emulated internal memory.
Yep.
Okay? So my question is if it was portable memory, I'd just pop it out and try and recover it and put a new card in. But I don't know what to do now in order to fix it.
Can you transfer it from that internal card? You said you put it 128 meg SD card in?
128 gig, yes. It's using it as internal right. memory.
So can,
now I move, I move,
can you move them over to move it from the actual built-in memory to that internal card?
Well, I moved the apps from the card to
no,
the
not the apps.
Memory.
No, the actual photos.
The photos are on which device?
The photos are on my phone, and they are on the SD card. But I'm not worried about the only photos. I could recover them from the Google.
Right.
You know, they're backed up to Google. My real concern is, can I take the card out? It's encrypted. But will I lose my calendar and contacts?
Maybe not. It depends. That's my favorite answer.
Yeah, I know.
If you are using Google's contacts and calendar apps,
I am.
Then you will not lose them because they are, in fact, saved at in Google's cloud and only duplicated on your machine. So if you lose your machine, they're still there.
Wait a minute. I guess I'm missing something here. Okay. If he's using the internal card of the phone.
No, he is using the SD card that he put in the phone.
All right. So, yeah, the SD card, he should be able to just move. If they're on the internal card, which I think he said set up
to. Hang on. The SD card is used when I put it into the phone. I have a choice of letting it be portable or as internal.
Right.
So it is used now as internal. But mm-hmm. when I go look, I think I understand the pathway where things are stored. There were several apps on the SD card that I moved back to the internal memory.
Right.
But all my pictures and music, which I have backed up separately besides Google,
mm-hmm.
is they're on the SD card. And
okay.
my question is if I turn the phone off and pop the card out and put a new card in, I know my photos and my music are probably gone, but I could recover that from
right.
the cloud?
Let him finish his question.
Right. So my real concern is that I don't care about, but I'm wondering about my contacts and my calendar.
Right. And if you are using Google's, here's how you check.
Yep.
Excuse me. Go on to google.com. google.com/calendar or calendar.google.com? I think it's either.
I went to my account and I can see the photos and I could see my calendar, but the events in my calendar don't show over the web. They do show on my phone. And I checked and made sure that it would refresh the calendar, but I don't see them up there.
What I was going to say, just to back up for a minute before.
Yep.
All right, you're saying this SD card is corrupt, right?
I think so.
All right, what I would do, I believe there are some utilities that can try to repair and recover what's on an SD card.
Yes.
So if you pull the SD card out.
Yep.
It might, you know, and try using one of these utilities, it might be able to recover what is damaged. It's sort of like in the hard drives back
yep.
in the day, you know, they'd sit there and do a check disk and then they'd mark an area bad. So that's what some of these programs can do is they'll mark the area bad and they'll just take that data and move it to another position on that SD card. Because I know for a fact you're probably not even close to being full on that 128 gig. But I would try using one of those utilities to see if you can repair it. And then that way you could, if you can repair it, then copy it off to a new SD card.
Right. But to talk about your other problem, if you go to contacts.google.com or calendar.google.com, you should see all those things. If you're not seeing them, then it is possible you are not using the Google calendar on your phone.
Right.
In which case, the only way you're going to get those things back is if they're... It is likely that whatever you're using, the path that they're on is actually your real internal storage, not the 128 gig drive. Because unless you specifically went into your calendar app and told it, use this one, not that one, and specifically went into your contact app and said, use this one, not that one. It should not be a problem. Here's the other thing. it would not hurt to pop out that card, boot up the phone, and see what you still have. Because if it doesn't work, you can always just put the card back in.
Yeah,
and the stuff will be back.
Yep.
As long as you don't do anything to the card while it's out.
Yeah, set it in a safe spot that's not going to get static electricity or anything else. Especially now with the, you know, we're closing up the homes and turning on the furnace. It's going to get dry in there. You know, if you can, definitely, you know, put it in some type of protective bag if you have any of those. And make sure so it just doesn't get static electricity.
Right. So the easiest thing to do at this point is pop the card and see what you have left. Again, that won't hurt anything. The second thing to do is, as Dave said, there are utilities that will repair or at least
try to recover
an SD card. But beyond that, I'm not sure what to tell you.
And did
are you there? Hello?
Hold on. Alan?
Alan?
Yeah, what happened? Did we lose you?
I think we lost him.
Okay. Okay. All right, hold on. Let me put you back on the air. Hold on.
Interesting.
Yeah, hold on one moment. There, he should be back. No,
are you there, Alan?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You didn't like my question that much?
Yeah, we hated you. Did you hear any of our answer?
I heard most of your answer that I can pop out the card. It should be there in internal with the calendar and the contact, so I can do that. Now, you know what? I'll just go get another card, but I can pop that one out and try and recover it.
Right.
But when I put the card in, it said it was encrypted. Does that matter to the recovery utilities?
It might. It depends on the type of
encryption.
Utility and the encryption that was used. I would suggest you go to EaseUS, EaseUS.
Yep.
They have a data recovery program. It's freeware.
Right, I think I already have it because it came with one of the cards that I bought.
There you go.
Like a SanDisk one. But I think I already have that.
Alan, one other question for you. When you set this phone up, did you purposely, you know, because normally you got to go through the menu systems and tell it to, say, any of your photos or anything else, save them off to the memory card?
I believe so.
Well, what he did was he made the memory card equal internal memory.
Yes.
As opposed to make it a separate card, which is why it's encrypted and why he may not be able to recover things from it.
But usually in a lot of them, you have to tell it whether to save it.
Not if you make it internal memory. If you equate it with internal memory, then you don't do that. It's only if you have it as a separate card that you can then go in and say here, not here. Because if you equate it, then it's all
it's just
here.
Doing one volume. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Right. And you see, when I look at it over the PC, it acts as one card.
Yep.
But when I look on the phone, it shows it separately.
Yep.
Right.
And if I go into storage and I tap on the card, I have the choice of renaming it, ejecting it, or reformatting it as a portable.
Well, give that a try, though.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Let us know, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing you might try, just for grins and giggles,
heck yeah. Mm-hmm.
Try moving one or two file, two pictures.
I can move one picture, if I connect to the PC, I can move one picture, and then it says the folder is empty after that.
Yeah,
so again, what I do mostly is I take pictures with my DSLR, and I copy them to the camera, or to the phone, and that still works. I can copy two, but I cannot copy from.
Okay. Yeah, what you want to do is at some point when you set it up, make that a separate device and do it that way. But for now, pop it out and see if you still have your calendar and your stuff.
Okay.
The other thing is to make sure you're using Google's calendar, because
Yes, that, I made sure of that, but I don't see the events. And I checked and I refreshed it and went through all that. So I don't understand that, but I really don't care. I can copy off the few appointments that I have, but it's the contacts that I'm concerned
well,
about.
Take out the SD card, you know, the 128 gig. Take that out. Boot the machine up. Matter of fact, when you take that card out, throw it in, say, like an envelope. You know, a regular white envelope, because then that way no static will get to it.
Yeah, just try
booting it up.
The other thing to do is, before you do any of that, go to contacts.google.com and see if your contacts are, in fact, there.
Okay, I didn't check contacts, but I did check calendar.
Right, but you want to check contacts.google.com and see where your stuff might... If your stuff is there, then you win. You're done.
Right. So the other thing is, could I connect up a USB-C drive and try and move some of that stuff over?
When you connect your phone to your computer, that's essentially what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
So if it doesn't work there, it's not going to work the other way.
Right. Okay. So basically, if I pop the card out, I probably can't hurt anything, right?
You got it.
Right. Okay. But check before you do anything, contacts.google.com, see if your stuff is there.
Yeah, I will do that. Like I said, I saw the pictures. I can actually delete from google.com and delete a picture, and then it will delete on my phone in a few minutes.
Yes.
Right, but like I said, I can't copy off. But if I go on the web, I can download the camera phone pictures, the few that I have, to back up that I don't have otherwise. So
there you go.
Fine. The real concern was contacts and calendar.
Right. So check both of those places, and like you said, you can redo the calendar stuff.
Right.
And see if your contacts are there.
Right. Well, thanks for the help. I appreciate it.
Yep.
All right.
Good luck.
Have a good one.
You too.
Right.
Yeah. Man, that's tough. Sometimes we outsmart ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to keep them separate means that it is easy then to pop it out, stick it in an SD carrier, and throw it in your computer and see what happens. But if you're not doing that, if you're not making sure that it remains a separate device, then once you've linked them up, it encrypts it. It does all of that stuff. It means that you don't know where things are kept any longer, and it's it's easier because it's one click, right? Make them the same. Now you're done. You don't have to think about it anymore. But when you run into a situation like this, now you're done. So keeping it separate means now you've got to go into Photos and say, put them on that card. You've got to go into Contacts and say, put them on that card, all of that stuff. But until then, at least, it's easier to do it the other way. I get it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Mean It, Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes on Jazz 90.1 Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have a couple of online questions and somebody on the line. So let's or rather text questions. Steve texted in and said that the audio stream is up on
YouTube.
YouTube. So that's well done, Steve. Somehow, from a mesa somewhere in the Southwest, he managed to get connectivity, and he's on his way. So somebody texted in, and I'm sorry I don't have names at this point for those things. And somebody asked how do you run Android on a laptop? They have specific apps they want to run. There are depends on whether or not you're in Windows an Android. If you're on, and I'm in the process of putting this online. I'm sorry, I find it difficult to talk and type at the same. Walking through gum.
Slough.
But if you are using Windows, then you can download BlueStacks at BlueStacks.com. If you are using Android, you can run Anbox, A-N-B-O-X, Android in a Box, from anbox.io. And if you are running a Mac, you can download BlueStacks 2. Now, in every one of these cases, you have to understand that this is not entirely full Android environment. You should be able to run most apps. If you have an app that requires some sort of phone resource, like making calls, you're certainly not going to be able to do that. And there are some few Android apps that will not run. And that's just, there's nothing that can be done about that. They look for specific phone resources. For example, your GPS or those kinds of things. They're just never going to run. But in general, you should be able to run most, for example, games and most apps on a PC using either BlueStacks or Anbox, and I will post those. It seems to be you need something called Arc Welder, and that's available in the Chrome Web Store. It's the app runtime for Chrome. I have to look that up more. I'm not as familiar with the Mac as I am with other things. It looks like this is a Mac repurposed as a Chromebook. Ooh, now that I say that, I have my daughter's original Mac, which I could turn into another Chromebook.
Ooh,
now BlueStacks 2. You want to use BlueStacks 2, which you should be. Which you should be able to load. So I'll just put the links to those two, BlueStacks and Anbox.io, are, even as we speak, being published to our website at soundbites.org. So if you're looking to run Android apps on your computer, that should do it for you. As for the second question, 5-year-old Mac Sierra wants to know if they should update it to Mojave. I'm going to let Steve call in on that one if he's still listening, because I don't even know if a 5-year-old Mac will take Mojave. So we'll wait for Steve to call in on that one. And in the meantime, we'll go to the phones ourselves and we'll talk to Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have gotten an older Dell tablet. I think it's a Venue, 11-inch. It's got a detachable keyboard. And I have two problems with it. One is that it is no longer recognizing my iPod when I attach it via the regular USB connection, although it does recognize a flash drive when inserted there. And this just started happening in the last couple of days.
Okay.
The second problem, which I think is independent, is that if one of the batteries, there's a battery in the tablet and a battery in the keyboard, if one of those drops to zero or close to zero, it doesn't transfer to the other battery, so it just stops working all of a sudden.
Right. Okay, so it... All right. Okay, let's take the second one first because that's an easier troubleshoot at the very least. If one of the batteries drops to zero and it turns itself off, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. If you then detach it from the keyboard and turn it on, does it come back on?
If the keyboard battery dropped to zero, then it does come back on.
Oh, so it's either, if either one drops to zero...
Then it shuts itself off.
Then it shuts itself off. Well, that's interesting. But you can see both batteries when you look at the battery app.
That's right.
And this is running what? Windows what?
10.
Okay. So you can see both batteries, but if you let them drop to zero. Okay. So. All right. This may not be the easy solution you'd like it to be, I think.
Okay.
What happens is there is circuitry in there that's supposed to do that switching. It may well be that the circuitry is damaged. And if that is the case, and that could be as simple as one of the connectors, right? Because when you click this thing together, that's magnetic, but there's a series of contacts.
That's right.
Right. So first, make sure that none of those contacts are in any way blocked.
Oh, okay.
Right. There may be a piece of smudge or dirt or dried ice cream. I don't know what I'm saying.
Right.
Something on there. Make sure that's all clean. Don't use anything abrasive to clean it, but make sure those are all clean and that you're getting good contacts. Because the way that works is you have a series of pins that cause the batteries to be shared, but you have another pin that says I'm out. Use the other one.
Uh-huh.
And if that pin is either damaged or, well, it wouldn't be a pin, it'd be a contact. But if that contact is damaged or corroded or, you know, whatever, then that's not going to work anymore.
Sometimes if you take, for the contacts, a simple thing like a pencil eraser.
Yep.
And make sure you dry it off with, say, a towel so it's good and dry. And then try rubbing it on the contacts.
Mm-hmm.
That'll quite often loosen any stuff up, whether it's even grease. Sometimes
right.
Grease and residue from your hand can, you know, build up and cause not to contact. And then if you take a dry cloth and just kind of lightly wipe off where you had that eraser, just so no residue of the eraser is on there, and or just blow it off and
right.
Try that.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, as for the other problem, does not recognize the flash drive. It does recognize a flash drive, doesn't recognize the iPod.
That's right.
That's...
And it did.
And of course it did.
Right, and it's not even... I mean, the iPod isn't even showing the battery's charging.
But it's Windows, and it just probably did a recent update.
Oh, hold
update.
On. The iPod doesn't charge anymore?
No, it does when I connect it to, like, a USB charger on a wall outlet. But it doesn't show that it's charging when I connect it to the tablet.
Do you is this USB A?
It's the standard, quarter inch wide.
Yeah, the original USB.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have more than one of those on your tablet?
No.
Okay. It if you can find another device that charges from USB, plug that in. It may well be that has been that the charging ability has been damaged. And what that tells me is that USB port in the keyboard or in the computer?
It's on the tablet part.
The tablet part. What that tells me is there may be an issue with the tablet battery itself.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
The battery, huh?
Yeah.
Could be.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, a Venue is not a new machine.
Right.
I'm not, I honestly don't know. I would call any of the. Is it a Venue 8, an 11?
I think it's an 11.
Okay, the 11 Pro.
I don't know, and I can't figure out how to find it.
Yeah.
I know it's got an Atom Z3775 processor.
Yeah, even if it's a Pro, it's from 2014. So I would call around. There are a number of really lovely, reputable vendors and repair groups around town. So I would make contact with at least one of them and see if they will at least take a look at this thing.
Okay.
Yeah, the Dell 11 Pro is. They're all Atom powered. So yeah, it's an excellent machine.
Yeah, I like it.
But like I said, it's 5 years old,
mm-hmm.
And so there you kind of are.
It does everything I need it to do when it's working properly.
No, and I get that. I absolutely get that. I'm on your side with that. If it ain't broke, why in God's name do you want to pay money to fix it?
Right.
I get that. All right, but that's really the best at this point I can tell you, and I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Yep, good luck.
Hey, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
It's the way it is.
Yeah, it is the way it is. And I have to say,
well, like you were saying though, if those USB ports, what people don't understand, and pulling stuff in and out, You know, just like you can damage a USB drive just on the way you say you have it sitting on the into the side of a laptop and you bump it.
Yep.
You actually snap on inside the flash drive those little tiny contacts that make contact to the actual chip. Well, the reverse can happen too. When you're pulling those out, whether you don't pull them straight out, you pull them on an angle, you can also snap the connectors inside the laptop.
Right.
That they could be loose or just, you know, break it right on off, making that USB port on that particular device, say the laptop, not working anymore.
Yep.
It works both ways.
I had that happen on one of my devices. I had a regular flash drive, a regular thumbstick plugged into it, and the cat jumped up on the table and just, bam, stuck a paw on it and just snapped the whole thing. And, I had three of them on that particular laptop, so it wasn't the end of civilization as we know it.
Yeah, but still no.
But when it's your only one, that would be an issue.
What I always recommend to folks, you know, instead of grabbing, say, at the end of the flash drive and just, you know, yanking it out. What I always tell folks to do, and did from day one, is put your fingers on the side of it and put it up close to, say, where it's attached and pull it out that way.
Slide it out.
Yeah, ease it on out. Don't go yanking it out because, again, those are small little solder points. And you could, especially if you've got data stored on that flash drive that's critical, and you pull, you know, like you say, pulling it out quick to yank it out, you know, quick, because you're in a hurry, quick grab it, and all of a sudden you bend it up or down, just a slight angle that can snap it.
Particularly, the less expensive your laptop is, mm-hmm. the more likely it is they're cheap solder joints.
Yep.
And certainly nowadays, it really doesn't matter. They're all going cheap. So you got to be careful. And that's the one thing I'm very upset with Apple about. They had that great magnetic connector.
Why they ever did away with that?
Why they did away with it and why they keep the patent. If they don't want it, release the patent, let everybody use
it. Somebody else adopt it because that was so great. The number of folks that I would have come into my shop when I had it going with a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was they were getting ready to go, and they quick grabbed the laptop and took off, and it was still plugged into the power supply.
Yep.
And it snapped the power connector inside the laptop. Well, you know, it's right there. Can't you fix it? And I tell them, well, you're looking at about 6 hours labor.
Yep.
Why so long? I go, that's just to get it apart and get it repaired. Then you got to put it back together because of all the hundreds of little screws.
Well, and on top of that, if you're going to unsolder a multi-layer board and solder something else onto a multi-layer board, I personally would not want to tackle that problem. I'm sorry.
Oh, I did it a number of times because...
it's a pain in the neck.
Oh, like I said, you literally... The folks, well, it's right there. Yeah, it's on the underside of the board. So you've literally got to take that whole laptop apart. The board has to come out, and you got to flip it over to then get at the joint that you can unsolder.
And then resolder something.
Yeah, and I did it, what was it? I'd say about 3 or 4 times because, you know, folks wanted, matter of fact, one time the guy was very embarrassed because he had just bought this brand new 17-inch HP laptop.
Yeah.
He set it down by his car.
No.
Yeah. And he stepped on it. And we had to take it apart. We had to replace the screen. And I had to replace, because he caught the corner, replace the power connector in the thing.
That's painful.
Brand new. I mean, this thing wasn't more than 2 weeks old.
We had a faculty member who came in. At least he was honest. God bless him, he was honest. He said, I've broken my laptop. I said, what'd you do? He said, I left it on top of my car. Well, at least he was honest. Half of them come in and say, I don't know. It's in pieces. What do you mean you don't know? At least he was honest. God bless him.
Yeah.
So I didn't even, you know, I said, okay, here's, you know, lesson learned, you're not getting a third one. This is how that works.
Well, you get a third one when you pay for it.
Right. Your department has to pay for the third one. I'll give you this one. But I always try to award honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Reward honesty. But they're very fragile. That's why I tell people all the time, and I'm a hypocrite because I didn't get it for this one yet. I tell people all the time, get the extended warranty if it's a laptop. If it's a desktop, okay, you know, shoot the dice, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a laptop, you're going to bang it around, you're going to drop it, you're going to step on it, you're going to do whatever. Get the extended warranty.
Mm-hmm.
It will pay off in the long run, I promise you. So that's something that we did at RIT. We always got a 3-year warranty, if not a 4-year warranty, every time. So when the guy said I left it on my car, I was able to just send it back to the vendor and say, need a replacement under warranty.
Well, it's just like our place. we just got all new tablets.
Yeah, yeah.
And normally we'd have the tablets and we could carry them around with us. Well, they decided this time, since they're brand new tablets, and to mitigate, you know, any further damage, they've got them now in mounts.
Oh, they're mounted. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Into the vehicle that you can't take them out. Well, that's a pain in the butt. Yeah, but at least the screens, when I was taking, you know, exchanging them, the screens and the different shatter patterns.
Yeah.
From people, you know, carrying them and, oh, it slipped and it dropped. And the glass, you know, but yet they're still booting it up. And yeah, no. So to mitigate that, they wound up putting them, well, this is going to be a pain in the butt, but yeah, probably they have less damage, though. And what I'm still concerned about is the cold's okay, you know, for these tablets.
Right.
But come summer,
they're going to get overheated.
The heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have to run the air conditioning all the time in the vehicle.
Right. Even when they're off.
Well,
unless you can put them in a shed somewhere.
Well, at night, it's not an issue. It's during the heat of the day that, you know, because that's
and
the whole
thing. As long as you crack a window.
Yeah. Just. But the heat, you know, you get 100 and some odd degrees in a vehicle, and yeah, there it goes.
Yep. It's a problem that you need to pay attention to, by the way. Few of us leave our phones or tablets in the car very much anymore. But we're getting to that part of the year that if you leave your laptop in the trunk for a while, when you bring it in, let it warm up before you turn it on. And if you're going to leave it in the car in the summer, put it in the shade part of the car, at least under something if you can, because that's probably a better deal all the way around. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I heard you talking about, and Dave, talking about repairing a laptop, and recently, I got an Acer Nitro 5 gaming laptop.
Yeah.
And it's got the bottom, it's the older version. It's they changed it around a little bit. It has the two doors on it where you can pop, unscrew them, pop them open, put a secondary hard drive in.
Right.
Where you can upgrade the memory modules.
Right.
Well, I was putting a secondary hard drive in it, and I accidentally dropped a screw into the case.
Oh,
little teeny little screws. So I said, "Oh boy." So I'll tell you, I got this laptop open in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It took longer to unscrew the screws than it did to take the little splining tool and open the edge.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, this laptop has been fantastic as far as upgradability and able to access the components inside, because it comes apart so easy. Like I said, it's harder to take the screws out than it is to take the splining tool and just pop the edge open.
Right, right. And I'll tell you what, many laptops used to do that. Not all of them do anymore. This particular Chromebook,
it's all press fit.
I don't know that I would ever be able to. I don't even have the right
No, you've got it for those. You've got to literally have these. They have these plastic tools.
Yeah.
That will sit there and pry tools.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've got. And
yep.
It works.
Sponge or something. I forget what it's called. You're lucky. And a lot of people don't think of that when they buy their stuff. The upgradability factor. Most machines have none because it's cheaper to
disposable
to not you're right to not have the ability to upgrade, because then you don't have people screwing around in your machine. And oh, by the way, it also means that instead of having sockets, you can just solder everything in at the factory and you're done.
Right. And what this laptop came with is it came with a PCIe solid state drive, a 256 solid state drive in the PCIe slot.
Right.
And then it has a regular SATA slot, and that's where I put the secondary hard drive in.
Right.
And it was so easy. It was just so easy, and I can get up to 32 gigs in this thing if I want to in memory.
Yep, and most of them don't allow that anymore. When I got my laptop, one of the things I looked for was the ability to change the hard drive, because I got a very cheap laptop, it came with 64 gig drive. The first thing I did was replace that with a 250 gig SSD card.
Right.
And then put Linux on that. So now it flies. But yeah, if you don't have that ability, then you're kind of stuck with what you're stuck with.
And that's what my wife, I ended up getting it for like $600. It was normally $800 on sale because they were putting the new ones out, and the new ones didn't have the upgrade slots in them.
Right.
You had to take the whole back off. It still had the ability, but you had to take the whole back off, the whole bottom off, I mean. So she asked, why is it so thick? I said, because it's a good laptop.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. Thank you very much. We gotta take a break. That's the end of the first hour. Don't go away, however. We've got a whole nother hour of this nonsense coming. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Take a quick bio break and then come on back and join us on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because we can remain member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on t'other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
It's hard to believe that Soundbites has been on the air for 30 years.
Nobody's been arrested yet.
Join Nick, Dave, and Steve every Saturday from noon till 2 on Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. And I know that Harry just gave the numbers, but I'll give them again. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And you know what? Instead of reading the news, I'm going to tell you the tale of my new Chrome. Oh, go ahead.
I think this must be Steve answering.
I just texted him that question.
Yeah,
about
he said no to Mojave. High Sierra should be okay. Should have at least 8 gig of RAM and an SDD for Mojave on old computers. May need a high power USB port to charge the iPod.
Oh, that's for the other question. So he's answered two questions. One, the person with the 5-year-old Max Sierra cannot move to Mojave, but they could move to High Sierra.
Yep.
And the problem, well, the iPod was working and now is not. So I think we have the same issues that we had before. So that's all right. But I think instead of reading a news item, I will tell you the story of my new Chromebook.
Oh yeah, you were gonna share you. Yeah.
This is one of those questions that should give heart to everybody all the time. This is my new... Oh, I can't show it to anybody because there's no thing. I have a new Acer Chromebook, the Asus Chromebook Flip C434T. Actually, TA, I believe. And I did a lot of research. I need a new Chromebook. Both of my old Chromebooks, the one I bought and the one I won, were well past their life.
Oh, that one they had in here each week was ancient.
Well, they're both 5 or 6 years old. 6 years old.
At least.
And so, yeah, they're done. And so I thought I got to buy a new one. So I went and I looked. I did all my research. I was seduced by the Pixelbook Go, but I thought, well, it didn't let me. The thing I didn't like is it didn't let me. It had no SD card slot. Mm-hmm. I really didn't like that. So I got the Asus Flip, which can flip around and be a tablet, which I'll never use. But it does have a touchscreen, which is nice.
Don't ever say
I know, I know. But it has a touchscreen and it has a micro SD slot. I've got a 64 gig SD in there and it's all nice. So I bought the thing. I got it on, Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And, cause I couldn't find one locally. I may not have looked hard enough. I admit that, but I got it on Amazon and they delivered it in a day. And it worked great, but it lost its charge overnight.
Yeah, so you were saying that.
So I charge it the next morning, would work great all day, lose its charge overnight. It made me crazy because it would hold its charge all day, mm-hmm. but it would lose its charge overnight.
When you're not using it.
When I'm not using it.
And it's plugged in to charge?
No. I don't leave it plugged in 24/7 because that's not good for the battery either. There's a bunch of things that aren't good for a battery, but we'll get that's a separate story. So I called up Asus and I told them my story and they said, look, you've had it for 3 days. We'll replace it. We'll just replace it. We're not even going to ask a question. Just here's your case. You know, yes, anyway. So they said, where did you buy it? I said, I bought it from Amazon. They said, we have to call Amazon. But here's your case number if they give you any questions. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a case number. I dutifully wrote it down. And I called Amazon. And the lady was very nice. And she said, but we have to check with Asus to see if there's an issue. I said, here's my case number. She said, you have a case number? I said, yes. She said, okay, let me just verify the case number and we'll move that right along. So yeah, about a minute later, she gets back on the line. She says, everything's fine. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to send you out a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to email you the return label.
Yep.
When you get the new one.
Put the old one
in. Put the old one in the box. You have 30 days to return it. So right now, I actually have two Asus Flip Chromebooks.
But the thing of it is, though, if you don't return the second one,
then they charge
you
me
get
for it.
Charged for it. That's so what folks have to realize.
Yeah.
You know, so, don't think they forget.
Yes.
They don't forget.
So I waited a few days to make sure this worked, but I had a revelation.
Uh-oh.
Not 40 minutes after I hung up the phone. You see, when I'm done with the Chromebook, even if I use it for 5 or 6 hours and I recharge it and everything else, when I'm done with it, I don't have a lot of space on my desk. So I close it, I unplug it, and I slot it down on the floor next to me, next to my chair. And I've been doing that with my other computers for years. Well, when I slot it on the floor right next to my desk, I've been putting it on the power button. So clearly it was turning on when I set it down. I don't see it because the power button lights up, but there's no light on the other side.
Right.
And draining the battery overnight. Now, in my defense, I have the laptop I was just talking about that I put the new hard drive in and put Linux in is also an Asus. and has exactly the same configuration with exactly the same volume rocker bar and power button on the side. And I've been putting that right in the same slot for 3 years, and it's never once turned on. But clearly this button is a little weaker or
cheaper. A little more sensitive.
A little more sensitive. And so I was turning it on overnight. And I felt like an idiot. But by the time I figured this out, I already had the return address information. They already had all the information on my laptop. I'm just going to send it back. No. I'm just going to send it back.
Just in case.
I feel like an idiot, though.
Well, just in case, though, that wasn't the full problem.
Right.
There could be, you know, just because you're doing that, that still seems, even because the way your sleep habits, you don't
well,
sleep.
Well, I don't sleep.
Sleep that often, that, you know, having it run overnight, if it was fully charged.
Yeah, it shouldn't, it was really only 5 hours. I sleep about 4.5 hours a night.
Yeah, but, and then if you're pulling that out and pulling it up, that should last a lot longer.
Yeah.
So I think there was underlying issues.
Yeah, it's very possible that there was indeed something else wrong
because
with it. But anyway, it's done now.
How many hours should this last?
They say 10. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, half a dozen tabs open right now. I've used, in the last hour, I've used 10% of my battery, and it says I got 12 hours left. So it really shouldn't have drained him. You're right. I shouldn't feel as bad as I feel.
No.
But it really
I think there's some other issues. And
yeah.
You discovering that, oh, okay. What you could do, so you can still continue to do that, is if you've got a slot that you're putting it in, what I would suggest is go to like Home Depot.
Yeah.
You know that foam padding that you can get for lining around windows?
Yes.
The stripping? You get a strip of that.
That's not a bad idea.
It's sticky, so you can cut it to length, put it in that slot. That way, when you drop it down in, it's padded.
Yep. In fact, what I thought of doing, and I really don't have to do this, is 3D print something that had a hole for the power button. But I could also take two strips and set them so that when I lay it in, there's one strip on one side of the power button, the other strip on the other side of the power button, and nothing in the middle. So it's still not.
Again, that's where, with that foam padding,
yeah,
you can get
saying.
Different widths
yep.
and thicknesses.
Yep.
And it's great, you know, for insulating around windows and everything else that would probably do it for you.
Yep. So that's my story on myself. And it was my week for technical issues. We also, you may have noticed that the Soundbites website was down yesterday. My hosting company moved me to a new server, which is great. Thank you for that. They've moved me to a faster, bigger, blah, 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 blah service. I mean, I'm using about 60 gigabytes of disk space. I'm paying for unlimited, so I don't feel bad. But they screwed up two sites. Soundbites was completely off.
Yep. Of course.
And AmeliaRose.com was redirecting to Teleflora. So I called them and they fixed those two issues. They have a third issue that they know is an issue and they haven't figured out how to fix it yet for a whole bunch of people. But that's why Soundbites is back on the air and we're good.
All right. Before we go back to the phones here,
yeah.
We got another person that wrote in, which is right up your alley. Having trouble installing Linux, many versions tried on a late 2009 iMac. Every installation resulted in a four screen showing up on the screen. Gibberish. Divides into quarters and quarters into a small desktop showing all the same. And small that it can't be read. Any possible way to install Linux so one screen shows up and I can use it?
Okay, excuse me. You keep talking. I got to come over and look at that. Let's not leave that air. Or stop talking and I'll just talk as I go.
Well, he wrote in that it's right where I've got the cursor. Screen, BAS...
Yeah, that's
his gibberish.
Yeah, that's his gibberish, divided into quarters and quarters into a small desktop, showing the, all the same and so small that it can't be read. Any possible way to install Linux on one screen show up and it can be used.
Keep talking.
It's interesting. I'd like to know what he meant by this screen. Like I say, it what he wrote is literally gibberish.
Divides well, it looks like it's a foreign language of some sort.
Yeah.
At any rate.
Divides. Sorry, he wrote up. Basically divides.
Okay, basically divides.
That makes a difference.
Autocorrect.
Thank you.
Autocorrected him into a foreign language. Nice. Yeah. So here's the thing. It depends on what version of a 2009 iMac should still be an Intel machine. It should be a core kind of Duo. I mean, if it's the depending on which one it is, I hope he texts. I would rather he would call in. Is it the stand up? Is it a real iMac standing up kind of thing? If it is
a desktop, you mean?
Yeah, desktop. Thank you. If it's a desktop, then it should handle everything. I mean, it's going to be an 8 gig at least machine. Even 4 gig is fine for Linux. That shouldn't be a problem. So what it sounds like is it may be the version he is trying. There are a number of
I'm hoping that he's going to tell us whether it's a desktop or a laptop.
Linux Mint should work just fine. Ubuntu, the various flavors of Ubuntu should work just fine. You may have a problem. You may have a problem with Red Hat or CentOS. You may have a problem with some of them. But I know that I personally have helped people put various flavors of Ubuntu, Linux Mint, and a couple of others. But those are the big ones. On
Steve wrote in and said. Video card drivers.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. And in general, whichever video card it thought you had, you don't have. So one of the things to do is to look at the specifications.
It's a desktop. Intel Core 2 Duo 4 gig ATI Radeon 256.
There you go. So if it's a Radeon... one of the things that happens when you install Linux, most versions, is you get a screen at some point that says, do you want to use some variation on the phrase non-free software, proprietary software, et cetera. It's a phrase like that. What happens is there are drivers for Linux for Radeon and NVIDIA cards. For the most part, they are not open source. They are not free. They are free to use, but they are not open source. So you can't go in and change them
around.
So most versions of Linux, when you install them, assume you want an all open source system. Although they give you the choice to use proprietary or non-free or closed source, one of those words, software. If you say no to that, then it does not load, in this case, the Radeon drivers. It uses an open source equivalent, which may not work well for that video card. So as you're going through the screens, read each one of them.
Don't get click happy.
Right. And when you get to the one that says, do you wish to use non-free or proprietary or closed source or whatever software, say yes. And then it will load those closed source, non-free, proprietary drivers that will let the screen work correctly. So that's the thing. That's the thing to try when you're loading Linux.
All right. Now we can go back to the phones.
Now we're back to the phone, and our caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have three questions, so tell me to shut up when I've taken too much time.
Shut up, Steve.
Okay.
See you next week.
I reloaded Windows on one of my laptops, and one of the things that's changed is the system tray will not collapse. It keeps moving from right to left as I add things to it, so it's competing with the taskbar. It's not collapsing into that little arrow, so it disappears. And everything I've researched tells me how to take items out of it or put them in, which is not what I want to do. I want the bar to collapse.
This is Windows 10.
Yes, Windows 10. It's all updated. It should be current.
Are you trying to hide the thing or just...
Yes. Generally speaking, the system tray takes up maybe three or four icons to the right side, and you've got an upward carrot to open it up. Mine doesn't do that. It just keeps loading.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. So, yeah. First thing to do... is you can go into your notification settings and say you don't want all icons in the notification area.
Okay.
So when you add an icon, you can decide to turn it on or off in the notification area.
Right.
So some you don't ever need on, right? Because there's, for example, there's one for Microsoft Outlook that just tells you it's loaded. Who cares?
I've got about 8 or 9 icons in the whole thing.
Right.
But they just keep working right to left.
Yep, and so you can go into the notification settings in your settings, go into notification settings, and one of the choices is select which icons appear on the taskbar. And you can turn some off. You can turn off the volume or the mouse or a VPN Outlook, anything. For example, the Windows Defender notification icon, maybe you don't want to see that all the time.
I think you're misunderstanding my question. I have it down to a few icons, but it's not collapsing. You know, it's not the... Basically, if you look at a Windows 10 screen, you might have 3 or 4 icons in a system tray showing.
Right.
But when you push the up arrow, up caret, then you've got all your notifications.
Right.
It's not hiding. It's not going down to the 4.
Oh, it's not collapsing.
Yep. And
in other words, he's seeing the couple there, but then when he clicks on it to expand it, you know, to see them all,
yeah,
it won't recollapse down to just to seeing the 2. Interesting problem. Next question.
No, that's not Windows 10. That's not Windows 10. Give me a second. Is it? No, that's not Windows 10. It's not really the quick access thing, is it? No, that's something different entirely.
Wouldn't it be the task manager window?
If you have all system icons turned on.
Which I don't.
Yeah, that would do it too. So it's all the wrong answers here. This is
that's my job.
That is, and you're very good at it.
Give me the right answers.
You're very good at it. All right, let me think about that one for a minute. What's your next question?
Okay, in Microsoft Edge. I did something, but every tab, instead of having a little name, has an image of what's in that tab. So it's taking up, on the smaller screens, it's taking up, you know, 20%, 30% of the screen.
Right.
I have no idea what I did, but I've got an image of the screen versus the tab that you're used to. How am I doing? Hard ones?
These are good. These are very good. So you don't want to turn off the... It's called the tab preview.
Okay.
Somebody wrote in, one of the switches in the notification area settings is show all. Toggle that off, and you should get collapse behavior the caller wants.
Turn off show all?
Show all, yeah.
Oh, but I'm not, okay. I'm wondering if that is the... Okay, I'll try that and call you back next week if it doesn't work.
Yeah, not a problem. As for, oh man, there's got to be an easier way than that. Because the thing I'm finding, okay, so you go, okay. No, that's images in the whole thing. You want tab, it's called the tab, I think it's called the tab preview bar. And you should be able to, yeah, I see it. Yeah, it's called the tab preview bar. And you should be able to click on, in the tab preview bar, at the right of the open tabs is the plus sign and then next to it an up arrow.
Okay.
And that up arrow, click on it. Or it might be a down arrow and click on it.
Right.
I forget which it is. Anyway, one of them turns on the tab previews and the other turns them off.
There you go. Simple as all get out.
There you go.
And last thing, I realize I'm running out of time. I am going to change a Windows XP laptop, a Windows 10 laptop, and I want to dual boot Linux and Cloud Ready. And I'm wondering if would the Linux work like Linux is supposed to if I dual boot?
I believe the way to do that is to load Cloud Ready first and then Linux. And Linux will say, do you want to own this thing or share it? And you say, share it.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Nina Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites right here in the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because you're the reason we're member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. The good thing about not having Steve here, aside from not having Steve here, sorry, Steve, is that you don't see me chair dancing. I can chair dance without anybody seeing it. Believe me, that's the best way to watch me chair dance. It's not. All right, what are we doing? Phones?
Yeah, we got a phone.
Welcome back to the show, and here's Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Yesterday I was out for hours. I had my iPhone 6, and I had it in a thin outer pocket of my jacket, so it got cold. I had a friend of mine try to call me, and all of a sudden my iPhone just didn't work. I wound up having to turn it on 2 or 3 times, literally booting it back up. It just simply cut off. So finally I thought, well, maybe the cold is getting to it. So I put it in on a inner pocket next to me and took it out about an hour later, and it worked again. So I'm wondering, I didn't think 24, 25 degrees would kill the phone. So I'm wondering, is that actually what happened in terms of the battery or what?
Yes. Okay. It's several things. First, cold kills batteries. Done. Secondly, Your iPhone 6 is how many years old? And that battery.
Plus, about 4 or 5 years old, I guess.
And that battery is about 4 or 5 years old. And that's kind of, you're hitting the lifespan edge on that battery. So that it is going to be, just like all of us, the older we get, the more sensitive we are to cold. So you want to make sure that in order to keep that phone happy, keep it snuggled up inside your jacket.
Why
near,
do you
near
say
your
that?
Skin. Yeah, as Dave's in the studio, he's got a scarf, a muffler, I guess.
No, it's a scarf.
He's got a scarf on. I'm only wearing just two shirts, and so, you know, I'm braving the cold in here. That's the problem.
That signals a new phone for me because I'm outdoors a lot this time of year, sometimes all day. And I need the phone not only simply to communicate, but for safety, too, if I need help or something. So I hate to do it, but this is the swan song for me.
Don't hate to keep yourself safe.
The thing of it is, though, is you know what? Actually, you might be lucky in that right now with the holidays starting up, they're starting to offer some great deals on packages in there and newer phones because of the holidays.
Right.
I'm going to have to do something. I can't really be back in places I go without this thing.
Right.
So I thought I would just confirm that. I was wondering what was going on. After about 15 minutes, I finally said, it must be the cold. It can't do anything else.
And well,
put it in next to me, took it out an hour later, worked fine. So I said, well, put it back next to me again.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it.
If you know, do like Nick and I did. If you don't want to spend a lot for a phone, you can get the Pixel 3A, and it's a great phone.
It's an amazing phone,
and you know, not much money.
$450 bucks as opposed to $1,000. You know,
yeah. So take a look at one.
I don't think I'm going to re-up an iPhone. They've gotten too expensive.
Yeah,
and they're lovely phones. They are great phones. They also, Apple is very proud of them. And you can buy a $1,000 Android phone or $1,200 Android phone if you want to. But if you're willing to wait an extra quarter of a second when you save and it literally is that much time when you save a picture or whatever, the 3A or the 3A XL is half the price.
Yep. And it's a great phone. And one other nice feature about it is unlike the rest of the phones, I don't care whether it's Apple or Android, they don't throw on all that bloatware. You literally load on the phone what you want.
Yeah. It's a very Apple-like experience.
Well, now, will it integrate into my Apple universe, if you will?
I would do some research into that, but the theory is yes. You can load the, of course, it's not iTunes anymore. It's all the iTunes pieces now.
Right.
But theoretically, those all work the same on an Android phone as they do on an iPhone. But I would check that out, and maybe Steve will text in on that as well. Even if you're buying an iPhone, if you can wait a couple of weeks and get those bargains. Because they'll come up, particularly as people buy the new phones for the holidays, their old phones will be available. Now, again, you know, you don't want a five-year-old iPhone.
Steve wrote in, iPhone 8 is $450.
There you go.
And is that the latest?
No, the 11 is the latest. But the 8 is a couple of years newer than the 6.
I see. Okay, because I will admit that I've gotten used to being able to work across platforms. You type something in or put a date or something in on one thing, and it's in on everything, and I don't have to go back and check.
Yep.
So I've gotten used to that. So I would like to at least try to carry over some of that functionality, even if I didn't have the iPhone.
Absolutely understandable. I'm that way. I'm in the Google ecosystem, so anything I put on my phone is on my Chromebook, is on my laptop, is on my desktop.
It's everywhere.
Right. And the ability to do that, whichever ecosystem you're in, the ability to do that is often priceless.
Right.
I get it. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I've got some decisions to make. I just can't see myself spending $1,000 for a phone, though. I think my safety is priceless, but again, $1,000 for a phone is just getting kind of ridiculous now. So I got to do something, though.
Yep.
All right. I will take your advice, and I will start doing some research.
There you go.
Let us know.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. The other thing I really like about the iPhone 3A XL is it's got a huge battery, 3,700 milliamp hours. And that's nice. The thing I don't like is it doesn't have an SD card. But that's more of a quibble than it is a deal breaker for me. So, it's in the, and
what other thing, on one of the other, persons called in and said, "Hey, Nick and Dave, where is the Linux workshop at and what time?"
Oh, dang it. I wrote that down and I didn't put it on this new machine. Son of a pup on a stick. All right, hold on. Did I put it? Was I smart and put it in Google Keep? Booting up Google Keep. And no, I was not that smart. It's one of the local the makerspace kind of thing. Linux, the user group, there it is, Meetup. That's Rochester, Minnesota. No, thank you.
Well, it's good that they have one.
It's good that they have one.
Just don't want to go that distance.
Yeah.
And they're probably colder than we are.
There's a student group, but one of the local things is doing it right now. And it's not, is it Makerspace? Somebody call in and help me.
Or if Steve knows, maybe he'll.
Somebody call
stay
in
tuned and we'll,
and
we'll try to find an
and
answer.
Help me. In the meantime, we'll talk to Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. Two things. When I first called in and Dave puts me on hold,
yeah,
I get this huge burst of static and I can barely hear you.
Okay.
And then when he picked up and said, hold on, he flips me over so I'm next in the queue, the static went away. But something, and it did it both on my cell phone and on my landline.
Hold on one second, Andy. Interlock from 12 to 4.
Interlock. Thank you. Interlock. Thank you, Steve.
Jeez, sorry,
and
Andy.
Crackers. Could not think of the name of it. Interlock.
So do you have a question, Andy?
Just a comment on Nick's Chromebook problem. When you put it in the slot, just turn it 90 degrees or 180 degrees.
That's what I'm doing now.
That's what we already said. So it's
What I'm doing now. I'm turning it 180 degrees and it works fine. But like I said, for years, I was just slotting it in. And it, and on my other Asus, it worked great. And on this one, it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I was listening to you talk about putting phone pieces down and whatnot, and also the light bulb on it. Wait a minute. Why don't you just turn it over 90 degrees or 180 degrees?
And yeah. But of course, I have to think of that. I've been doing it for years the other way around. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Interlock, by the way, is at 1115 East Main Street. 1115 East Main Street, door number 7. There it is. The Linux Workshop. I think it's today. It says November 16th on this one, but so it's definitely next week. But it's Suite 200. 1115 East Main Street, door 7, Suite 200. I, of course, can't go because I'm here. But the rest of you should go because Linux is super cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. What's up, Steve?
Yeah, well, now that you're on Linux, this is the right call to pick up on. Basically, you guys got me interested in this years ago on the other station, trying Linux.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of deep into it, but I'm having a problem right now that's really disappointing to me. There's this place online called osdisk.com where I used to be able to buy repositories because I don't have an internet connected to my desktop. And I've been able to successfully install. You'll learn a lot more doing it manually, too.
Sure.
Because I've been using, like, Fedora and Debian, right? And basically, Debian took off some multiplayers I didn't really like. that I did, Amarok and Banshee, and I wanted to try Mint this time. I went back, and they closed down on me.
Yeah.
And I can't find any place else to find the repository disc. I used to get like 16 disc sets of DVDs and manually input them on Fedora, putting in the home directory using DNF by Bash on command line, or Debian through the Synaptic Package Manager, set it up that way, you know what I mean?
Right.
And basically, I can't find any place online now where you can buy the complete set of repository software. Do you know of any, by any chance? Maybe I'm overlooking something. I looked on the internet. I couldn't find anything else that works like this.
Well, there's two things. Okay, there's shoplinuxonline.com.
Shoplinuxonline.com.
Right, and you can buy distros on CD or DVD or USB drives, and they're not terribly expensive. I don't know what their shipping is like, but they have those available, and so you can buy them there. They're not free. Each of the distributions has their own online service, of course, and you can download them on. You know, you'd have to use somebody else's machine at that point. And put them on an SD card or whatever, thumb drive, that sort of thing. And if you I know you don't have a net connection, but DistroWatch lists all of the systems, and Wikipedia has a list of all the live CDs that are available online, and.
Most of the live stuff, though, doesn't really have very comprehensive. I've been getting into everything, looking through these repositories, things that are historically old and put back on the later disk. You can still get on Debian the first three ISOs, download them, and then burn them to a DVD and use it that way.
Sure.
But that's as far as it goes. The other 13 aren't available.
Right. Many of them won't be anymore. Some of them, of course, have just stopped being used.
Yeah.
Right, and nobody's maintaining that stuff. You might find them on archive.org. Hold on. I'm going to archive.org on software, Linux. Linux, come on back. Come back to me. Yeah, a bunch of stuff is there in terms of software. We just want software, thank you very much. So you can get old versions on Mandrake and there are a couple of the old Slackware releases and a bunch of Linux Archive CDs and all kinds of things you can download. Now, you have to have a network connection to do that, but once you've got it, you can burn it to a CD or a DVD, or you can put it on a thumb drive or whatever you want to do and go home and play with it.
Yeah.
But the place that you can find at least some of that stuff is at archive.org.
Okay, I'll try something like that, but I'll tell you, this OS disk place was really good, and they shut down.
A lot of them do that, and I hate to say it, but... as time goes on, you can download all the latest, if you've got a net connection, you can download all the latest versions right from the source, which means they're more up to date, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's been less need for those kinds of, we used to get them in the magazines every month.
Yeah. You know, can I make a recommendation?
Sure.
Sure. Now, if for anybody that wants to try something on Linux where they... something that's only available like software, proprietary software from Windows, Fedora 30 right now has, if you get the repositories that can input the Wine application, it works really good with a lot of different programs that are just available for like Windows or Apple. And I'll tell you, I found that a lot of, like, I use graphic arts software. There's things that I've gotten onto with that I wasn't able to before with some of the other flavors of Linux.
Right. Yes, Wine is an emulator. Well, no, it isn't. Wine is not an emulator. That's what Wine stands for. But Wine is a program that lets you run Windows applications. directly on Linux machines, just like the Android stuff that I talked about earlier lets you run Android apps on Windows or Linux. Wine lets you run Windows apps on Linux.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We also have a correction that a number of people have talked to me about already, that the Linux workshop at Interlock is the third Saturday of the month, so it's next week.
Which was what you read before.
I read before. Yeah, so the Linux workshop is next Saturday. It's the third Saturday of every month, from noon to 4 p.m., at Interlock Rochester, 1115 East Main Street, door 7, suite 200. And they will answer all your questions. They'll fix your problems, answer questions about Ubuntu and FOSS. If you've got a laptop or I suppose a Raspberry Pi, or you just want to lug your whole desktop in with you, bring it with you. And they're happy to help you out right there where it is. Really good people. Doing really good stuff. I wish it weren't on a Saturday from noon on, because I'd love to go myself. There you have it. Maybe I'll forego the thing I do after the show and stop in next week after the show. Huh. You never know. But yeah, so if you're interested in Linux, and here's a hint, you should be, stop down to the to Interlock next Saturday. And the Interlock Hackerspace.
Well, that's my whole problem is I've been getting, because of Raspbian, the Raspberry Pis, I've been getting more into it, which is Linux, and trying to learn the pseudocode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sudo commands and everything else, because when I built this one Raspberry Pi, I set it up for some of the folks will understand this, an all-star node.
Sure.
And it's literally connecting all over the world. But that forced me to learn, with the help of Jim there from RIT, you know, a lot of the pseudocode and everything else and SSHing into it. I mean, I was a total novice to all this, and I took a crash course. Now I want to learn more. But the problem is there's not enough hours in a day.
Well, that's right. That's right. That's one of the problems that we all have. We all love to learn stuff, but we all don't have enough time anymore. But yeah, if you're interested in Linux, the best way to learn it is to check out Interlock Rochester. And that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thank you. We got a lot of challengers today. That was nice. I like that.
A good variety.
Yeah, it's really
very
nice.
Good variety of calls.
Really nice. Thank you, Steve, for keeping an ear open for us during the show. We appreciate that. Hope you get back from the Badlands of the Southwest for next week. And thank you all for listening. We're delighted and grateful that you're joining us every week. We are very pleased and proud of all of the people who were kind enough to become members during the last pledge drive. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, probably Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 55 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.